musicianship, well, you have to be committed to that. And their parents, their dad taught them to play the fiddle, their mom taught them to play the piano, and each one of them can play every instrument that you saw there and more. And it's just an unusual family that has given me a lot of enjoyment for the last month. I'm 59. My dad played in the same dance band for longer than I've been alive. That's a long time for one band to play together. Dan, I want you to think about that. That when you're in your 80s, it's going to be the same guys, same arrangements. And one of the beautiful things about my relationship with my dad was he didn't just play music, he talked about music. And I remember him saying to, well, I remember saying to him one time, how could you stand being with the same people for 60 years, playing the same band? He says, Dave, it's hard to be mad at somebody when you're making beautiful music with them. There's something to that. And I'm going to say that this metaphor that we have for this series of the dance, it's hard to not be in love if you're dancing beautifully with someone. And this song, The Call to Dance, is what our message is about today. There's a short story by Flannery O'Connor that many consider her best. It's called A Good Man is Hard to Find. And there's an evil character in that story, the bad guy. And he makes a statement, and I've used this before in sermons. He says, Jesus throwed everything off. Jesus changed everything. That is true. And today, we're going to reconsider and hopefully maybe till some new ground on just how much Jesus has thrown everything off in calling us to dance with him. Like I said before, that video, the concert hall was full of happy faces. And I think that of any place in the world, Jesus' body, his church, should be a place full of happy faces. Now, if you know me, you know that I'm not ridiculous about this. I understand, just as we grieve with those who grieve, we rejoice with those who rejoice. But above all, Jesus' people have come to know that he throwed everything off. He did what we sang about today. He destroyed our enemy, our sin nature. It's gone for eternity, even though now we still live in this realm. He defeated death so that, he says, if you believe in me, though you be dead, yet you shall live. In fact, if you believe in me, you will never die. I don't know about you, but that's worth smiling about. That is worth dancing about. So today, I'm going to figuratively call us to dance, but I do think there is something literal about the call to dance in worship. And we have examples in the Old Testament of people dancing before the Lord, and David's dance before the Lord is so famous. Don't tell me it's wrong to dance in church. In fact, it's right And it's beautiful and it's good. Why? God created all of these arts. He is the creator. He created all these art forms. Can you imagine a world without music? God created music. And music so restores our souls. It's a gift of God. And He's gifted some of you with a special gift of music. I'm here to say that He has gifted some of you with a special gift of dance. And if you're not dancing, you don't know that yet. I actually took 20 ballroom dancing lessons in high school because I wanted to learn how to dance. And sadly, I'm out of practice. But there is in dancing something that there should be in worship. Physical expression, bodily expression, because we want to worship with our whole person. And it's easy for me to worship with my mind and to just be thinking about God and appreciating the things of God. But it is more meaningful if I can gyrate a little bit, if I can get it moving, because it's all hooked together. I know you guys love it when I gyrate. That's why you come. Know this, worship is an act of the whole person. True, full worship means that you express yourself physically. In some cultures, Alex's mom is from the Greek Orthodox culture. One of the things that some Greek Orthodox churches do is they don't allow you to sit. And the service can be long. And one of the reasons for that is they want your body to know that it's there. And if you get tired, so be it. Because it becomes a discipline of love for God through the tiredness. The whole body in worship. As I said, Jesus throwed everything off. I want to go to a really interesting thing that he said, and please turn with me. Matthew 11. By the way, we've ordered some more church Bibles. We'll have 25 more here next week. And the fact that they disappear is a great thing. It means that some young life kid maybe is taking a Bible home. That's awesome. If you want one of these Bibles, it's yours. You promise to read it. So Jesus throwed everything off. And if you lived in Israel at the time of his life, and if you were in the region he was in, you'd see that it caused quite a stir. Look at Matthew 11, 16. Now, he throwed everything off because he came announcing that the kingdom of God was here in him. And that was new information to a whole very legalistic religious culture. And he was saying, you know what? That legalism, that telling people that they can't dance, that's not it. I'm it. This is what he says, verse 16. But to what shall I compare this generation? And I think we could say, to what could he compare this generation? 2011. It is like children sitting in the marketplaces and calling to their playmates. Let's think about that. People in the social milieu where people connect, the marketplace, children who The age in life when life should be full of freedom. When your responsibilities are have a good time and be good. Be good and have a good time. Children sitting in the marketplace, and they call to their playmates. And there's a concern. There's something wrong in the lives of these children. This is what he says. We played the flute for you, and you did not dance. Did you know Jesus said this? Did you know that he said, there's something wrong if the playing of the flute doesn't make you dance? You're meant to dance. And if the children aren't dancing, ain't nobody dancing. We sang a dirge. You know what a dirge is? A funeral hymn. And you did not mourn. So what's the problem? People are dull. People are so beat up by, one, their sin nature, and two, the brokenness of living and the loss of joy, that they're just dull. And he says, that's what it's like amongst you people. Now, he was specifically speaking to religious people. I feel like today, I can feel assured that I'm specifically speaking to religious people, or you wouldn't be here. And my call to us, I include myself in this, because I can get, if I don't have people of the month, I can get pretty dull, see? It kind of keeps me going. You've all been people of the month, and many of you remain so. Just want you to know that. And now he goes on to say, it doesn't seem to matter what kind of messenger comes your way. And he's speaking of John the Baptist, and he says this, for John came neither eating nor drinking. What did John the Baptist live on? Locusts and honey. But that's pretty boring, for me anyway. I think eating's like dancing. I really do, feasting. I'm better at one than the other, okay? But remember, he said that there was no greater man born of woman than John the Baptist. John the Baptist was great. But people said, look what they said, he has a demon. We're so broken that when true godly greatness that offers us the freedom of repentance and new life, we say, he's scary. I don't want any part of that. And then he takes it one step further because he threw everything off. The Son of Man. Remember through the Christmas season we talked about the fact that 90% of the time, Jesus referred to himself as the Son of Man. He considered himself one of us. Why? He is. He's God in human flesh. And he says, God in human flesh came. Could you ask for more? God in human flesh came, and he wasn't like John. You couldn't say that he was just this aesthetic, esoteric, locust and honey eater who wore furs. You couldn't say that about Jesus. You know why? You might be surprised. The Son of Man came eating and drinking. He didn't live this aesthetic life. He got right in there with the folks. And he went to the wedding at Cana. and he made more wine. And in the Jewish culture, he probably danced at that wedding. With a bunch of guys maybe in a line doing what they do. It's cool. And they say, just as they were wrong about John having a demon because nothing could be further from the truth, in their self-protection, and friends, this is the veneer I want to rip off of us. All right, I can't do it. I ask God by his Spirit to rip off this veneer of self-protection. They said, this guy is weird. Because look at him. He's a glutton and a drunkard. Things weren't true any more than John had a demon was true. But if you can cast aspersions on someone else, it protects you, doesn't it? If you can say, I don't dare take in what this guy's teaching because it's a threat to my dug-in ways. I have already determined that I'm going to be a wallflower in this dance. He's a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. And there was no worse thing you could say about somebody back then to say he's a friend of a tax collector, because the tax collector was a Jewish neighbor who had gone over to the other side, the Romans. And he was putting the hurt on the people for his own benefit. Then Jesus says this, yet wisdom is justified by her deeds. You can hear all these things that people say about Jesus or about John the Baptist, but none of it means anything. It's their deeds that mean something. That is true of God's people as well. I love this church. This church is my life. But this call to dance that we have to start 2011 is a call to us to get off of our butts, to get away from the wall, and to join in the dance. And what is this dance? What is it? It is to understand that our paradigms or our ways of thinking about God and life with God are so inadequate. They're so cliche. And they're as passé as the Garden of Eden in the fall. And Jesus came, and he didn't just throw everything off. The interesting thing is, he said everything right. He said everything right. I'm going to ask you a question. And I talked about this when I said, look at the faces of the dancers. And when my dad said, it's hard to not be happy when you're making beautiful music with somebody. And it's this question. Do you want to be happy? Okay, the answer is yes. The answer is yes, we all want to be happy. One of the smartest men ever, I like to use biggest, best, smartest, hyperbole, but I believe this, was a French scientist, mathematician, philosopher, and friend of Brandon Dorn, Blaise Pascal. Right, Brandon? One of the smartest guys ever. Truly.
We go way back.
Brandon, every now and then, will send me a text. Pascal said. And I'll say, wow, that is something. How about this? All men and women seek happiness. This is without exception. Whatever different means they employ, they all tend to this end. And I want to stop right here. I'm so grateful that you're here today, that you're filling a chair today, that you've come to the dance. Are you comfortable, Lucas? That's good. I want you to be comfortable at the dance. No, I mean it. Mother, don't be embarrassed. I want Lucas to be here for the dance, and he's here. Because, probably because mom and dad said so, but he's here. Okay? And the fact that you're all here says that today you decided that somehow happiness was connected to being here. There's a whole bunch of empty chairs. There are really, the truth is, and there's always been more people who have determined that their happiness, I don't go to church. I don't want to be connected to a faith community. Now, here's the truth. They have, sadly, an inadequate view of both God and the church. But maybe even more sadly, sometimes it's one they've learned. We should be the people who are engaged with the unchurched or the underchurched, the unbeliever, the not knowing, the generation of people who God's flute plays and they don't dance. We should be so dancing that we just dance right over to them and say, please come with me and dance. Because you're missing out. You don't understand. Listen to what Pascal goes on to say. The cause of some going to war and of others avoiding it, so he takes the extremes of life here, is the same desire in both, attended with different views. The will, that's our will, the will never takes the least step but to this object, and this object is happiness. When our wills assert themselves, it's because the assertion is, this is going to yield happiness in the long run or in the short run. This is the motive of every action of man, and this, listen to this, whoa, God, I read this and I thought, really? This is the This is the motive of every action of man, even of those who hang themselves. Well, I think about it, and escape is an attempt to leave sorrow, confusion, a step to happiness. Now, I ask you, does seeking happiness seem self-centered? I'm not one who aspires to the Christian kind of self-help theology, that Jesus came so that we could be happy. Well, yeah. But you want to know why he came? So that God could be glorified. So that God could have his way. When man fell, friends, that throwed everything off. When Jesus came at the cross, that made everything right. This desire to be right with God and the happiness that comes with it is not self-centered. It's the way of the Spirit working on our lives. Over the centuries, there have been Christian movements who, I think, sadly, have been well-intentioned but way off. And I would call these movements pietistic movements, where the measure of one's spirituality or the measure of one's rightness with God was, what can I deny myself? What rules can I so stringently live by that obviously God has to be happy with me if I do this? That doesn't sound like playing the flute, does it? Jesus didn't come to bring a burdensome law. He came to fulfill it. And the fulfilling of that law is that we live the way he lived. And that is in union with the Spirit of God. I need to talk more about the Spirit. Because if you feel the love of God, if when you sing, your soul rises up. For those who weren't here, I'm going to keep saying this until she's not person of the month anymore. When Liesl sang on Christmas Eve, Breath of Heaven, I asked, did you feel something? And yeah, I felt something. What'd you feel? I'm telling you that you felt the beauty of the Spirit of God moving in this room. We're supposed to live by our relationship with the living God who inhabits us. And he calls us to live. He calls us out of the shadows and into the light. He calls us away from the safety of being a wallflower at the dance and out onto the dance floor. He says, when the flute starts playing, you should be dancing, because that's the proper response. That's Jesus, friends. That's Jesus. He calls us to a life of pleasure. Uh-oh. God has created pleasure in many, many forms. And pleasure is not his enemy. Pleasure is not his competitor. Pleasure is his gift. God's competitor, his enemy, are idols. If we find our pleasure in things that are not of God, we are finding our pleasure in idols. And it's foolish, because they can't fulfill. They can't fulfill. He can, he does, and he will. So when he calls you to dance, he's saying, I'm calling you to the pleasure of my company. This Spirit of God. I don't remember if I told you this or not. Like I said, I'm 59 and I've slept since then, so I don't know if I've told you this or not, but you guys sang a song last week during communion called Lord of the Dance. Scott, did you explain our history with that song? You're in my history with John Fisher? Okay. I don't know. Sometimes you say silly things. This song here, this book is written by a guy named John Fisher. I don't know if you can see the title. It says, Real Christians, and it crosses out the word don't. Real Christians Dance. I bought this probably in the 70s. I don't know. Doesn't matter. It's old. I'm old. Scott and I were leading Young Life Club in Leroy, friends, and a Wesleyan student, friends, who was one of our Young Life leaders, went to hear a concert, and John Fisher, who was then a very well-received contemporary Christian singer, kind of a prophet, he never bought into the contemporary Christian music culture because he saw its dangers, but he was writing music and being a voice in that world. He was in town, and we often at clubs sang Lord of the Dance. And Connie, she was a dancer. She was not afraid of anyone. She walked up to him afterwards and said, Hey, John Fisher, I'm Connie Walker. I'm a Young Life leader. He says, I love Young Life. She says, we're having a club tonight in Leroy. Would you come? He said, I'll come. How about it? Go to a concert. Go ask them if they'll spend the evening with you. He did. He came. He saw. He led the song. What a special gift. What a special gift. He led that song. Scott probably got to accompany him. It was neat. The spirit, the dance. John Fisher writes this.
If you haven't heard anything else I've said today, hear this.
Before I read this, I want you to think of what Jesus said to Nicodemus in John 3. He says, spirit's like the wind. Can't see it. You don't know where it's coming from, and you don't know where it's going. But it's there, and it's moving, and it's changing things. Here's what John Fisher says. The Spirit of God dances. He can't be tamed. Stop. Do you view God as wild? If you don't, you've got a weak God. Sounds a lot like a lion named Aslan, doesn't it? He won't be contained. He refuses to be confined to a weekend retreat, an evening meeting, or even a moment of devotion. He doesn't follow schedules, programs, or agendas. And he doesn't wait for his name to be called. The Spirit of God dances. He dances right under the noses of those who don't believe in dancing, who are mostly religious people. And he dances right on by those who do. He dances through the assemblies of the keepers of the dance. In this book, we're the keepers of the dance. He dances right through here. If you don't recognize, I've been lax in this. When we gather together, God, he's here right now. The creator of the universe is here. Wow. We see through a glass darkly, remember? He's here. And we can't contain him. Poof. He dances through the assemblies of the keepers of the dance and right on out the door. And no one sees him go. The Spirit of God refuses to be choreographed. His dance is raw, new, and jerky. It's not always pleasing to the eye, but his dance is fresh in the lives of human beings whose floors have not been cleaned up. Where do you see the Spirit of God working? It's in someone who is broken and knows it and says, God, I need you. I need you. I can't dance anymore. I've never been able to dance the way I should, and I'm tired of it. I need you. He's there. The promises of God to the heart that cries out to him are enormous and true. If you seek me with all your heart, you'll find me. Call on me. I will in no way cast you out. Cast your cares upon me. Cast your burdens on me because I care for you. That's where he is, in power. That's where the dance is most readily seen. It isn't well rehearsed, polished, or perfect. It slips and slides, sometimes innovative and shocking, and at other times just exhilarant. But it's always real. This should come as no surprise. It's always been this way. The Lord of the dance himself was here once. And it was the same way then. And I love this. He danced on the keeper's holy days. Got him in trouble, didn't it? And he broke their holy laws. Got him in trouble. His timing, if not his whole dance, always seemed offbeat. He turned the tables, literally, on their dance in the temple as he led a solemn dance of respect through their lighthearted nonchalance. He says, "This is God's holy temple, and I'm just not going to sit by and allow this nonchalant attitude towards the true God. Over you go. You're out of here." He rode along Palm Drive on Palm Sunday atop a donkey at the head of the greatest Hosanna dance ever. I hope you understand now that during this series, we're going to try to break out. We're going to try to start our year with a sense of excitement when we hear the music start to play. And the excitement is that's a flute. That's God's flute calling us to dance. And we're going to do it. We're going to dance. Let's hear some music now. When people start leaving, I know I've got to stop preaching.